Sometimes the fun begins when the paved road ends. Chevy Silverado 2500 HD is made to work hard and play hard on the road or off. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com for details and experience life in HD.
A couple things. Well, a lot going on in the world. Let's talk about one thing. I saw this opinion piece over the weekend, and Andy Shaw joins us. He's the board member with ChangeIllinois.org, also former head of the Better Government Association. And a lot of people are looking to what's going to happen on Inauguration Day tomorrow, Andy. And I know you've written some really interesting opinion pieces, too, I want to get to. But this whole Biden pledge to unite the country in this situation. And this piece I saw over the weekend, they said the one thing you can do is be boring. They're saying that inaugural speeches, you know, can be very powerful or not. In that moment, you may remember it. Most people do not remember the words. But you will remember and you will live within the tone that he sets as president and the actions he takes. And how to unify the country is probably front and center, you could say, top of the pyramid in terms of what he might need to try to accomplish here. And I just wonder your thoughts, as you've covered so many political cycles, so many over the years, and seen everything. What do you think about that?
Well, Anna, I'm not very optimistic about a quick unification. I think the anger among the Trump supporters about the past election runs so deep and played out in such a horrific form at the Capitol a week ago that it's going to take a very long time to unify if we can ever do it. The rift is so deep right now. Polarized politics. Washington has been a cesspool and just a place where good things don't get done and bad things frequently get done. And so I think the boring part makes sense because we had a hyperbolic 4 years. It was almost like a presidency on steroids with the tweets and the nastiness and the bombast and the divisiveness, especially post-election. So I think boring is fine, but most importantly is not anything Joe Biden says. This relief package is really, really important. And then a lot of things that actually matter to everybody. For instance, Trump voters, just like everyone else, are concerned about, you know, paying for college education for their kids and having affordable health care and an access to good jobs and a clean environment if it doesn't cost a lot of jobs. And so to the extent that Biden programmatically with a Democratic Senate and House can actually do some things that mean things in people's lives, that's where unison comes from. It comes from tangible efforts to improve the quality of people's lives and a ratcheting down of the divisive rhetoric. And so those two things have potential, but it's going to take a very long time. When 90% of Republicans still believe that Trump won that election, and there's no evidence to prove that, you know we have a serious problem. I mean, people just disbelieve the truth these days, and that's a hard thing to change after years of falsehoods and exaggerations and dissembling.
I do want to get to the trust in elections, because that's the subject of one of your pieces, and you also do one about budgets, not a sexy topic, but one that is also super important to our state right now, and we have a change of power in Springfield with a new speaker and a lot ahead there. I want to ask you one more thing, though, as we look forward to Inauguration Day. The president himself will not be there. First time in how long? I don't know. Is it forever that you haven't seen that? A lot of Republicans are now sort of slowly saying they will be there, but it's sort of a limited tent right now. And you just kind of feel like, okay, he has his work cut out for him. The unification, you're right, can be in policies, things that impact people's lives moving forward, stimulus. That's important right now. People are looking to, why haven't you done this already? We've needed this for so long, Congress. This is a time when we really, truly need government.
Yeah, and what I pointed out in a guest column in the Tribune over the weekend is that something Biden can do, and whether he reads the columns or people tell him about these things, is he could appoint a commission and put on it a couple of people who are well-respected, people like George W. Bush from the Republican Party, perhaps Obama or Clinton from the Democratic Party, and give them a few staffers and let them kind of revisit the mechanics of this past election, including the court cases, and let them validate the results, even though we have no doubt that the election was clean by virtually every other investigation. Maybe take one more look and then let people know what you find or don't find, and maybe that helps create a new reality for the Trump supporters. And secondly, let's take a closer look at the election mechanics. You know, the mail-in ballots and the drop boxes, and those are the kinds of things that raise the fears of fraud. Mail-in ballots get counted by hand. People immediately think that opens up the possibility to throw some of them away and fudge it with others. And so let's look at how the balloting gets done. Let's make sure the machines, the voting machines are safe. Let's look for a uniform way to challenge election results and verify them. And then let's see how the court cases went, because not a single one was successful, but did Trump get his day in court? And I think those two things could go a long way to at least giving Trump voters an alternate reality to consider, rather than the one they believe in now, which was that the election was stolen. So I'd like to see Biden do that. Will he? I have no idea. But that was just one person's idea, one person's suggestion for a way to try to move in this healing direction.
Yeah, and restoring faith in the elections is important. I haven't seen the direct polls on that to see, you know, you said it was, did you say 90%? What was the number?
Well, I may have my numbers off, but I will tell you that a vast majority of Republicans still have faith in Trump, and a vast majority believe the election was stolen. And that's astonishing when there's no evidence to support that. That shows you the power of social media and conservative, you know, TV and radio, spreading the myth of a stolen election. Really, if that's all you hear, then you're going to believe that. And so that's really the tricky part. Taking Trump off Twitter may be one thing, but there are so many other ways people get information from radio, TV, and social, from all kinds of people other than Donald Trump, that it's easy to keep conspiracy theories alive. And I'd hate to see Twitter and Facebook and all the other socials begin mass censorship, because that really undermines the First Amendment. We need freedom of speech. Sadly, it causes a lot of problems, but I think we'd be worse off if we didn't have it.
Mm-hmm. That's a whole other topic that I hope we have time to get to. I just, this massive expansion of mail-in voting, I think, is the thing you pinpoint in your article as being one of the things people are suspicious of, because it just happened overnight. We had to do it. It was the pandemic, and there are reasons why that was done that way. But when you have hand-counting ballots and mail-in voting and drop boxes and things on a scale we've never seen before, I think that sort of thing... Go ahead.
And Anna, the mail-in ballots and drop boxes are here to stay. Pandemic or not, we're going to continue to see a lot of our voting done that way. And I think what happened in this past election is Biden and the Democrats encouraged people to vote by mail. Trump and a lot of his allies discouraged people, saying that it was a fraudulent system. And in the inner cities and a lot of the big cities with heavy minority populations, the mail-in voting was extremely heavy, raising this fear that somehow minorities were going to game the system. And I think that all fed into the conspiracy theory that a lot of people still believe. So I think we need to find a way to make people feel better about the election system, both what happened in November and what's going to happen in the next election or two. Because if you don't have faith in your most basic democratic institution, the vote, then you really have a problem in your country. Your democracy is in peril.
Yeah, it's a great one. This one I want to just direct people if they want to see the whole thing. It's in the Chicago Tribune. Biden can rebuild trust in our elections and needs to do that. Do you think if they actually did a full investigation of all these new policies, they would find serious ways or sincere ways to improve the system for future elections? Or do you think we got pretty much there the way we did it now?
No,
what do you think?
The way I say it, my explanation is that the election system is strong, but it's frayed a bit. The pillars are strong, but like an old monument, you know, there's a bit of decaying and a bit of fraying around the edges. And so I think we need to look at how the elections are conducted, and then how the canvasses are done and the certification is done and the challenges are handled in the court suits. Here's one problem, Anna, that I can't solve, and that is that every state has its own system. So there's no uniformity. Illinois does it one way, Wisconsin does it another way. You know, some count the mail-in ballots as soon as they arrive, some don't count them till election day. And, you know, some of them have certification one way and validation another way and challenges. And sadly, but it complicates the system when you don't have a uniform approach to how you not just have the election, but what happens afterwards. And, you know, we have a system where we leave it up to the states, and that creates a lot of problems too. If you think that some states are gaming the system and others aren't, then you're going to be suspicious. So yes, we need a review, and we need to make sure it's tight and that ballot integrity is protected. And yes, I think the past election was clean. At least every investigation said it was, but I do think we can improve our mechanics so that the next time around we're even more confident. But more importantly than that, if you improve the mechanics and validate this past election, you present the Trump doubters with another set of facts to at least consider. You may not persuade them, but give them a new reality, give them one that's based on fact and not fiction, and maybe that'll help.
Yeah. Hey, Andy, can you stick around for a second? I do want to ask you, you mentioned First Amendment and freedom of speech, and that's in the news. There's also your other piece that you wrote about time to end the budget shell game in Springfield, your ideas about how to bring us back to fiscal responsibility. An amazing piece that I would like you to see if you can stick around and just talk about for a few minutes. You got a few more?
More than happy to.
Okay, 1:45 here on WGN, back with Andy Shaw, ChangeIllinois.org, and the former head of the BGA in just a moment. Back with Andy Shaw here, and Andy, the other really cool thought piece that you wrote out there, and you've got a lot of thoughts. Over the holidays, I hope, did you get some fun in it all? Are you seeing your family at all? What's going on?
Well, I'm a geezer now, Anna. You know, I'm 72 years old. I've had two pretty fun careers, and I'm semi-retired now. So yes, lots of family time, lots of time to exercise and write. And so, yeah, lots of time to do pretty much anything. And I'd like to get COVID out of the way because I think I'll get a little more active in the political and governmental worlds on a consulting basis, I don't need a new job, but I want to help out a little bit more when I can get back in the mix and we can all get back together and not just do everything remotely. So all good. Thanks for asking.
I'm glad to hear. You know, so I've covered Springfield not nearly as much as you, but I've been down there budget time, and they slap this 500-page thing on you, and you say, pass them all out, and then there's usually an overview, and then there's a big address, and then you try to make sense of it all, and it's difficult to do that, and then at the end of the day, you know that really it involves Springfield math. They say it's a balanced budget, and by constitution, I guess it's supposed to be, right? But it never really is, and you're taking a hard look at it in this piece to say, look, there is a way to bring us back to fiscal responsibility.
Yeah, let's not get too far into the weeds because this is really wonky. This is accounting stuff, and it comes from my friends at a small group called Truth in Accounting, which has been crusading for honest budgeting. So long story short, one of the reasons we have such a financial mess in Illinois is we don't account for our spending and our revenue accurately. In other words, we account for some of the spending, but if you have a bill due next year, it won't appear in your budget, even though you're going to have to pay it. And so what happens is your budget, under the accounting that we now do, your budget does not reflect the debts that are owed in the future. They only reflect what comes in and out that particular year. And so that's one of the reasons we've ended up with a $4 billion budget deficit and $8 or $9 billion in unpaid bills and a pension debt approaching $200 billion. And no one even knew about that until we had more freedom of information so we could get the real figures. And so if you must include in your financial reports and your budgeting the amount of money you have to pay out in the out years. Don't just tell me what's happening this year, because every time you borrow or have a contract that's 5 years long or have pension obligations, your budget and your financial reports don't reflect the long-term debt. So we can change the accounting systems. Businesses use cash-based accounting, which basically takes into account the debts and not just what's happening this year. So long story short, we need to switch to cash-based accounting so that every dollar that's owed is reflected in your budgets and your debts rather than just the ones that are this year. And if we could switch to that, we'd begin to have honest budgeting. Now, it doesn't get us out of the hole. You need money for that. But at least we can start telling people the true story before it's too late. In Illinois, sadly, we may be almost too late. We're almost a failed state when it comes to our finances. We're among the five worst states in America in terms of our debt and our liabilities.
Yeah, and you have new leadership in Springfield now. Representative Welch is now Speaker Welch, and that's a major shift. I imagine the whole time you were covering politics, and down there it was Mike Madigan. And so now we have someone new, and I don't know what that really means yet, other than he is saying some of the things you never heard Mike Madigan say before. He is saying, we will look at ethics. We will ask for more. We will look at maps and try to come up with an independent crew to review the way we draw our districts. We will look at some of these things like term limits, stuff like that. What's your view from what you're hearing?
Well, I will say this. If you're a Democrat and you belong to a union and you're a public employee or you wanted to have a gay marriage, or you wanted to have marijuana, or you wanted to go to a casino, Mike Madigan took good care of you. In other words, he really took care of a lot of the things people wanted. What he didn't do was exercise any control over fiscal responsibility, which is why we have all those numbers we talked about, and he didn't do much about ethics and good government. And so Welch has two big tasks. He has to do several things on the ethics front and the good government front. You mentioned them. We need a non-gerrymandered map so we have competition in our legislative districts. We need to open up the legislating process in Springfield so the speaker doesn't control every bill. Mike Madigan had life or death control over every proposal. If he didn't like your proposal, it wouldn't get to a committee and would never get to the floor. It wouldn't be considered. It was dead on arrival. So we need Republicans' proposals need to be considered along with Democrats' proposals, so that has to be opened up. The map mapping has to be honest. We need much more disclosure from our elected officials. We need to clamp down on lobbying abuse and pension abuse. There's so many ethical things we need. We also need to start shaving units of government because we have so many. So on one front, Welch's challenge is fiscal, and on the other front, it's ethics. And he's not alone. Don Harmon, the Senate president, has good instincts. J.B. Pritzker also in these areas. Madigan has been an obstacle to most of the reforms I talked about, and with his power, none of them became law. Now, if Welch is going to, you know, really think about good government along with Don Harmon, the Senate president, and Governor J.B. Pritzker, we may see some changes. And let me tell you, these Democrats need some wins because they're in some hot water going to the next round of elections. You know, the Pritzker tax that failed is a big deal. The Supreme Court justice who lost his retention gives Republicans a chance to take over the Illinois Supreme Court. That would be huge. The Illinois House lost two Democratic seats. That's unheard of in the Madigan area. The corruption that Madigan was part of, at least at a distance, has really made the tax and the corruption has really hurt the Democrats. And so this is a great time for all of them to be for fiscal responsibility and ethics reform. And that's what I'm going to be pushing for as hard as I can as a board member at Change Illinois. I hope Chris Welch is serious. He is a Madigan protege, and so there's a lot of suspicion that he may talk the talk, but he won't walk the walk. Let's wait and see. I got my fingers crossed.
I have mine crossed, too. I really do, for the hope of our state and for doing what's right in terms of ending some of those systems of corruption that have cost us dearly. And I think that's where we are now, where people are sort of recognizing this, is that there is a cost to this. And I know several news organizations have broken that down and said there is a cost to corruption, and it does come back to haunt all of us. So it's a time to sort of clean things up, and it's a difficult time. Lots ahead for them. Before we run out of time, though, Andy Shaw, you mentioned First Amendment rights, freedom of speech, and you're looking at the landscape right now, a lot going on there. I'm interested to hear your thoughts there. We didn't have a chance to elaborate earlier, but we have a few moments now.
Yeah, and I think the biggest concern right now is social media and the ability of the big tech companies to basically shut down speech. And, you know, a lot of people who didn't like the things that Donald Trump did on Twitter were probably happy to see him removed from his Twitter account. But it gives me the shakes when I see that happen. As much as I found many of Trump's tweets offensive and nasty, I still think that free speech is one of the cornerstones of a democracy, like election integrity, and I just don't like the idea that we're able to just take somebody off of social because we don't like what they said. You know, the old saying was, the only thing you can't cry fire in a crowded theater. You know, you can't cause people, you know, to die. Now, people might argue that the deaths in the Capitol during the riots were caused in part by Trump's tweets. I don't think you could prove A causes B, but you know, a lot of social media is dangerous. But when you start selectively deciding that this person is more dangerous than this one, I don't think I want these tech companies playing God with the First Amendment. And, you know, I'd rather see vile speech than no speech at all. I think, you know, some of the 4 years of tweets have had a bad effect on the overall, on the country in some ways, but I don't know if the country would be better off if no one was able to speak freely. So I guess my big concern is the big tech companies need to be reined in a bit. Maybe they need to be broken up, but I just don't like their ability to take you off their sites just because of what you said.
It makes me so uneasy, too, and well put, well said. I feel like that is the town square now. Social media is the town square, and you can't shout fire in a crowded theater, right? We know that, but outside of those sort of incendiary, inciting violence kinds of tweets, which you can censor independently, I don't know that you need to block people and block platforms entirely and block the New York Post back before the election was also sort of troubling for me, too. It just felt as if...
Can I say one more thing real fast?
Quickly.
I'm much more concerned about the failure of the FBI and the intelligence agencies to figure out, to realize what was about to happen at the Capitol. There was all kinds of intel. Social media was filled with planning and plotting and threats, and to not have adequate security there in the face of this, it wasn't about Trump's tweets. It was about the failure of our security system, our intelligence agencies monitor this stuff. And if they can't stop it when you monitor it, don't stop the speech, but bring out the troops.
Yeah. Hey, Andy, and a conversation for another time, too. I just thank you for all of your input today, and please come back again soon, okay? Be well.
Anytime. Thanks, Anna, and you be well.